Our final speaker is Nelson Peary, veteran revolutionary organizer and theoretician, chairperson of the Central Committee of the Communist Labor Party.
Brother Abdul Al-Kalimat, Brother Professor Sales, sisters and brothers, thank you very much for the opportunity for us to present our views to this gathering of the most experienced and developed section of the African American fighter. Topic number 10 in the call to the conference. Yes, black liberation is on the agenda. Yes, social revolution is on the agenda. And a resounding no to the question, is Malcolm X out of date? The three questions are inextricably bound together. Social revolution is an historical law. Society is built around its tools. Change the tools and you must change society. Changes in the tools are the inevitable result of the development of science and labor. No one can deny that electronics, the computer, and the robot are revolutionizing the tools. We must have social revolution in order to have black liberation, but there are no guarantees. We must not be passive. Tonight, the enemy is meeting with his think tanks to figure out how do they maintain their privilege despite and within the social revolution. I believe we are in for a long and difficult and brutal struggle. Therefore, Malcolm X, the superb agitator and the model warrior of revolution and liberation, cannot be out of date. We have gathered here to pick up his spear where it has fallen and to continue that struggle. That spear, that legacy is summed up by its best-known phrase, freedom by any means necessary. This meeting, ranging across the political spectrum, is an opportunity for us to present our various means and collectively determine which are to be used under what circumstance. Sisters and brothers, if longing and striving and fighting were the foundations of liberation, we would have all been free by 1619. These subjective elements are indispensable, but of themselves cannot produce a revolution. There must be a unity of these subjective elements with an objective base. The objective base of social revolution matures as the spontaneously developing means of production become incompatible with the existing social order. The electronic economic revolution marks our historical era. Electronics is emerging in an antagonistic relationship to both mechanical industrial energy and the social order that was built to accommodate it. We are in an economic revolution. A social revolution follows every economic revolution. Wherein lies the importance and significance of robotics? Our entire society is constructed upon a system of buying and selling commodities. In a rough way, the amount of labor required to produce a commodity governs the exchange ratio. Robotics is a method of production with very little or no labor. Thus, the value relationship between commodities, including labor power, is seriously disturbed and in time destroyed. Labor creates value. Value is expressed in price. Price allows for the exchange of goods with money. Robotics is production without labor and ultimately without value. Exchange of goods by money prices cannot continue when production is done with very little labor. The system of exchange by money is already beginning to break down. Social revolution is emerging and will throw all classes into mutual combat. It is within this context that the blow for liberation must be struck. Our political war for liberation must follow the rules of any other war. We must fashion our weapons and employ them in a manner that conforms to the objective factors of that war. Now, an examination of history shows that an exploited class, be they slave or proletarian, cannot emancipate themselves until a more productive form of energy can take their place. All revolutions rest on this basis. As a more productive form of energy develops, in this case robotics, The working class is thrown into helpless competition against it. They must change their conditions, or like John Henry in our folk song, compete until they lay down their hammer and die. In order to compete with electronics on the labor market, the workers must constantly lower their value, their price, or their wage. Through mutual competition, they sink lower and lower economically and socially. They are ultimately forced into a struggle for political power, and thus a social revolution assumes the features of a class. The working class cannot achieve political supremacy without fighting for black liberation. Black liberation is not possible without the political supremacy of the class. Beyond being African Americans, we are the most working class, the most proletarian of all the peoples of this country. As this struggle gets underway, the revolutionary movement transforms from an ideological to a practical struggle. This is beginning before our very eyes. How has this historically validated process affected our struggle? It is difficult to break into history, but I would like to begin with emancipation. Emancipation was the result of a great class and social revolution against slavery. Spurred on by the Industrial Revolution, it took place with the industrial capitalists already in economic control of the country. They needed to wrest political control from the planters. They did it militarily on the battlefield and politically through Reconstruction. A rapprochement and class unity with the planters was necessary. It was possible because although the slaves were slaves, the planters, like the bankers and industrialists, were capitalists. This rapprochement, at the expense of the freedmen, converted the South overnight from rebellion to the most patriotic and chauvinistic section of the country. The emancipated African Americans faced a hostile and united capitalist class. Both sides were caught in the demand for cotton by the ongoing Industrial Revolution and the world market. Since there was no productive energy to take their place, the ex-slaves were savagely attacked by counter-revolution. Politically and militarily defeated, they were driven back into a new and often more horrible form of slavery. 70 years later, the mechanical cotton picker emerged as the superior form of productive energy that made liberation from debt peonage, convict lease, sharecropping, and tenant farming possible. The immediate result of the mechanization of Southern agriculture was the tractoring the African Americans off the land. Forced into the towns and cities, they became a compact group just as the industrialization of the South got underway in earnest. The political and physical force represented by this new urban proletariat found itself in temporary alliance with industry and its need for workers. By 1955, the South was experiencing a labor shortage. Law and custom prevented the full utilization of black labor in the factories. Segregation was rigidly enforced to guarantee slave-like farm and service workers. In order to control the industrial workforce, the Southern rulers had to maintain segregation. Integrating the workforce would be the beginning of the end to the system of starvation wages. On the one hand, the shortage of labor was cutting profits of Northern finance capital in the South. And on the other hand, there was a mass of unemployed labor. De jure segregation had to go. Northern capital again relied upon the black masses to break the resistance of its Southern wing. Thus began the so-called Second Reconstruction. Ahead lie a decade of hard fighting and bloody sacrifice on the part of the African Americans. Through their efforts, the Southern bourgeoisie was again brought to heel. Then, again, the hotlines to the White House were broken. The Southern capitalists united with the Northern capitalists, and the blacks were again abandoned and attacked. Perhaps more important than the limited integration was the final consolidation of the African Americans into a people, and thus the rise of class as well as social consciousness. The concentration of the black masses in the central cities and the resultant accumulation of political power gave the African Americans a sense of strength and made an offensive for freedom possible. Old methods of struggle were laid aside. The Watts uprising fully ushered in the new, the time of Malcolm X. The significance of the Watts uprising and those that followed lay in this. Watts was an uprising of the black workers. They did not have connections to or reliance upon the white liberals who had always dominated the black struggle for freedom. To maintain this alliance, the white liberals demanded that the black leaders adhere to the tactic of nonviolence as the only tactic. The uprising spelt an end forever, both to white leadership and to the tactic of nonviolence as the sole tactic. In its stead rose the slogan of Malcolm X, freedom by any means necessary. As electronics developed, so did a new category, structural unemployment. This is a new type of unemployment, a permanent unemployment built into the system. Heretofore, the government provided an acceptable degree of health care, education, and housing to the army of the unemployed. They would be needed to quickly fill in during periods of rapid economic expansion. As temporary unemployment became permanent, the money was transferred from the welfare of the unemployed to the welfare of the bankers and owners of industry. The capitalist class will not shelter and feed what it cannot exploit. The African-American workers, the heart of the unskilled and semi-skilled section of the working class, were the first to feel the effects of electronics and the political policy that followed. Most of the American people accepted what appeared to be the government's abandoning of black dependent women and children, the ill and the infirm. Of course, once legalized, that policy applied to all. In this manner, the features of crisis began to emerge. Faced with a growing army of permanently unemployed, the ruling class automatically turned to those tactics that has served them throughout history. That tactic is to attack the blacks in such a manner as to unite the white workers with the white capitalists. The attack against unskilled labor appeared to be an attack against the black worker. However, because of minimal integration, that attack became entangled with white workers who are in the same economic category. It is no longer possible to isolate and attack the blacks in the same old way. Today, the invisible man is white and poor, but he is there. Each economic and legal attack against the black pushes the unemployed white more and more into the line of fire. Malcolm X thoroughly understood this when he said, and I quote, "I believe that there will ultimately be a clash between the oppressed and those that do the oppressing. I believe that there will be a clash between those who want freedom, justice, and equality for everyone, and those who want to continue the system of exploitation. I believe there will be that kind of clash, but I don't think it will be based on the color of the skin." Close quotes. These are the conditions and the social motion that has sent our youth, our militants, our progressive intelligentsia, our restless workers searching for an ideology and a banner around which they can rally and take a stand. It was inevitable that they would discover Malcolm X waiting for them. His death was more than the creation of another martyr. His incredible capacity for growth and development posed a dilemma for his enemies. At one stage, it was not necessary to kill him. At another, it was not possible. The Malcolm that lives on represents the polarity, the necessary ideology for our people to coalesce around. This Malcolm is more dangerous than the other. This one cannot be killed and cannot be silenced. Malcolm was no ideologue. He grew with the struggle. He constantly strove to abstract theory from the mass experience and from his own. We must carry that legacy on. The offensive against us is underway. The first step was a hostile neglect of those thrown into the ranks of the permanently unemployed. That tactic has not worked. The next logical and rational step is genocide. The most violent characteristics of capitalism are clearly seen in the American system. This is the legacy both of slavery and America's freedom from the paternalism connected to the feudal regimes. The genocidal tendency inherent in the system was early vented against the Native American Indian. Unable to incorporate them into production, capitalism attempted to resolve the Indian question through genocide. It is not a subjective decision by some mean people. The policy of genocide flows from the exploitive nature of the system and the racism which sustains it. Brothers and sisters, friends and comrades all, there is but one reason to rally round the banner of Malcolm X. That is to greet and listen and debate in the comradely spirit that sustained our forefathers as they marched to battle against a naked slavery. We must, as Malcolm did, examine and grapple with the real world. That real world is frightening and dangerous. We, as a people, are at risk. The ghetto is a concentration camp. The murderous guards are uniformed in blue. The oven is the street. We must strategize and we must fight. If we do not, they will continue to kill us with AIDS, with alcohol, and drugs, and our poverty-spawned diseases. They will continue to kill us with that most tragic of deaths, by the social frustrations that hurl us in blind rage against one another. The danger is present. Our duty is clear. With open heart and hand, let us speak and listen that we may truly unite. For tomorrow we must form our ranks and in this final struggle carry the banners of Malcolm X across the ramparts of our enemies. Thank you, comrades.